Hello, everybody, and welcome to Ultimate Despair Reprise, a Danganronpa recap podcast going through the entire Danganronpa series, one murder at a time. I, of course, am your ultimate host, Kyrie.
I'm the ultimate podcaster, Jennifer.
And running into class with a toast in my mouth and my bag clearly open, I am the ultimate just barely prepared student. I literally just finished this half of the chapter like 5 minutes ago.
Ultimate just did her homework like 5 minutes before class.
I've had a very busy week.
Hi, I'm Inez. Also, I realized that last time we recorded, I intentionally mispronounced my own name, but I'm still not really sure if that was like a funny joke at all. Well, so please send in if you thought mispronouncing it Ains was funny. Thanks.
Yeah.
If you think it's funny, hit one. If you think it's a bad joke, hit two.
I don't. Wait a minute. Are they listening to it on their phones?
I mean, like an old timey rotary. I was doing an American Idol. I was doing an American Idol goof, but I mean, right.
I guess nobody remembers that.
I didn't know we were a calling show.
I forgot American Idol existed. Anyway, today we are going over the daily life segment of Chapter 4 of Danganronpa 1, Trigger Happy Havoc.
So the morning after witnessing Sakura and Monokuma fighting in the gym, Makoto decides not to tell the rest of the group, hoping that his silence will prevent further infighting. After breakfast, the gang explores the fourth floor, which contains many new rooms, and a locked headmaster's office. Kyoko admits that she sent Makoto into the boys' room to see how the mastermind would react, and reasons that Makoto's assault was proof that something important was hidden there. She also knows that Makoto's hiding something, but he refuses to share with her. So Kyoko storms off, angry that Makoto wasn't willing to reciprocate after she had confided in him. Makoto finds another suspicious photo with Sayaka, Hifumi, and Celeste hanging out in a normal-looking classroom. Monokuma once again snatches it away while confirming it is legitimate. Yasuhiro suggests kicking down the headmaster's door, which prompts Monokuma to make a new rule. Breaking down a locked door is prohibited. Makoto brings up the photo, leading to Kyoko to lash out and accuse Makoto of believing the mastermind over his friends. Byakuya abruptly arrives in the dining room, hinting that Alter Ego has something to say. Alter Ego finished cracking the laptop's files, revealing that a plan was put in place to isolate the students of Hope's Peak Academy in response to the biggest, most awful, most tragic event in human history. Additionally, the person who initiated the plan was the school's headmaster, who might even still be on the school grounds. Kyoko turns pale, then aggressively insists she'll find the headmaster no matter what. As the students emerge from the locker room, Monokuma angrily declares an eye for an eye, a fang for a fang. By the following morning, the tension between Kyoko and Makoto has worsened, with her refusing to even eat breakfast while he's in the same room. Makoto knows he needs to tell her the truth, though he insists on talking with Sakura first. Sakura says it'll have to happen tomorrow, but Monokuma uses that delay to beat him to the punch. He holds a nighttime assembly where he reveals that Sakura is the spy. Sakura admits her role, while Makoto lets the rest of the group know he saw the fight and that Monokuma has a hostage. Sakura also reveals she promised to kill one of her classmates, but now refuses, even insisting she'll take down the mastermind. The group turns on her, save for Aoi and Makoto. Byakuya goes too far and gets smacked by Aoi. Sakura gets isolated from the group, and Aoi and Genocider Show fight. The fight upsets Sakura, so she says she needs to draw a line. Afterwards, Makoto and Kyoko chat. Kyoko understands why Makoto was silent about Sakura, but expresses her frustration in Makoto's lack of faith in her. Nevertheless, the two of them move on. Makoto and Kyoko meet with Alter Ego, who has to be plugged into the school network. Kyoko concedes, and the two take her to the secret room, smuggling her under Makoto's jacket and plugging her into a nearby Ethernet port. Makoto falls asleep in his room when Kyoko rings the doorbell. Aoi needs their help. They see Sakura not moving within a locked room. Aoi grabs a broom, which Makoto uses to smash the window, open the door, and confirm that Sakura has died. And that's about it.
Yeah. There's a lot in there. There's a pretty healthy chapter. I will say the second thing that happens, which is hilarious, is Yasuhiro telling his hamburger story. Can we talk about Yasuhiro's dumb hamburger story, please?
And also that there's a unique music track for it.
Oh yeah, there is a unique music track for that shit, huh?
It's pretty spectacular. It's like he uses contact with aliens to determine that like his local burger joint is like mixing the beef with pork. So it's not 100% beef patties.
Well, I mean, shit, dog. If you can't use it for that, like, what can you use it for?
Like, that is true.
Alien abduction has to be good for something.
It's just such a bizarre aside, and like, I had forgotten about it, but then like, I saw the scene happen, and I was just sitting here thinking, like, okay, is there like some deeper meaning to this? Is there like I was racking my brain for anything that happens later in the game if this relates to anything? But no, it's just a dumb story that Yasuhiro tells.
Yeah, they even create a unique background for the moment. You see a UFO's beam separating a burger, and I think it only really takes parts of the meat and then nothing else.
It's a lot. But it's also really, really funny. But yeah, the chapter opens up with like a montage. We see a montage of like everyone who has died to this point. And it is, it's quite something. So we start out with death montage. Death montage is a lot because it just very concisely summarizes all the like deaths that has happened, and it like kind of reminds you that like, oh, we're down to like 5 people now.
It's 5 people. It's Byakuya, for some fucking reason, Toko, us, Kirigiri, Aoi. Oh, 7 people. Aoi, Sakura, and then Kirikin. Am I counting Kirigiri twice? I think I might be.
Well, she's pretty good.
She's very good. She's at least worth 2 people.
Absolutely. But it's clear that the gang is like pretty shaken. You know, they're like trying to keep it together. I read like Yasuhiro's hamburger story is just sort of like he's trying to lighten the mood, especially considering that like the guy who was kind of keeping them, I wouldn't say like completely together. I mean, he was just the, you know, he was, you know, it was Ishimaru.
I would say like when Ishimaru was unavailable, like pretty often, Hiro would be the one who stepped into the leadership role, even if he's a huge dumbass. Like, he is very much basically the leader.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying his best. Which I kind of like.
Yeah.
Yeah, he definitely, I feel like he's a very strong emotional core of the group. Even though he's a big, stupid comic relief character, he's very much like, he feels genuine in that sense.
Absolutely.
And it definitely lets me use my suspension. It definitely works with my suspension of disbelief. It's good shit.
So after that breakfast, you know, they realize, oh, there's like a new level to explore. So they all decide to explore level 4, and as I was looking at your notes, you were making a Silent Hill comparison at some point.
Yeah, like the floors look like in the original Silent Hill when like the whole town goes into the chain link underworld.
This is Silent Hill 1, yeah. Right. Because, yeah. Go ahead.
Super, super quick side note. Are we going to be looking at like 7 to 15 floors in this building? One for each potential murder victim? Because I feel like if I was the architect of Hell World,
you would make it a 15.
I would
go
15 story buildings. Every time somebody dies, you unlock a floor.
You would
get to killing, lads.
You would make it if like, someone doesn't like fucking Wayside School, then
oh, I would fucking absolutely make it like Wayside
School. Oh my absolutely. God, you it... that is a poll. God, I fucking hated those books. I read a bunch of them, but I hated
why?
Them.
Why?
I have beef with Wayside School.
Why?
I don't know.
I don't remember them being bad.
I just remember them being fine, but just being like, it is a grudge so long held that I have forgotten the original.
Mean, that's just how the American education system works, Gary.
Wayside School. Yep, they
Wayside
look at
school.
They look at
all
the
I'm
fucking,
saying.
They look at all the I'm fucking. They look at the fucking blueprint. Build it sideways.
Yeah. Hey. Wayside. That's just American Hope's Peak. They look at the blueprint and they accidentally build a bunch of murder machines.
Well,
you know. Oh, geez, whoops! Accidentally bolted all the windows shut. Oopsie, fucking poopsie.
Whoops.
Aw, man. Aw, beans.
So
the staff isn't gonna like this.
Cleaning the walls involves cleaning the ceiling. That's how it works at Wayside Point High.
That's how it works at Riverdale.
So level 4 is it's mostly coming up to important looking rooms because, well, they don't comment on it much at the moment, but if you look at the map on the data right behind the data center is a giant bear icon, so there's probably something there, along with a teacher's room which has a bunch of flowers in it and a locked headmaster's door. And within the faculty room, that's where they find a photo of the three most recent people who have died hanging out together, more or less. Well, actually,
and
Saika.
Saika's kind of in the background.
The two most recent deaths in Saika.
Yep. You know, it's so funny. Like, if you look at that photo, it looks like that Celeste is trying to gouge out, like, Yufui's eyeballs, which, I mean...
God, one can wish.
One can wish.
Yeah.
Because
God,
of the way...
Celeste.
It's just...
Shoot for the moon and you land among the stars, Celeste. Shoot for Hifumi's eyeballs, and maybe you can cut off his nose or something too. If you're not successful,
I don't know. Take some
tips from Shell.
Yep, I do appreciate that in these photos of like the previous students that they're in like different uniforms or whatever. But Celeste is still in her gothic Lolita getup because like she never stops.
She definitely gets yelled at like all the time by teachers for it too. Like, oh man. You just fucking came into class again dressed like a clown?
Celestia, loose cannon.
Yeah, loose cannon, turn in your gun and badge.
Turn in your wig clips.
I wonder how many dresses that look exactly like that she owns.
365.
You know what?
One for every day of the year. They are all identical. She has a huge walk-in closet. You open the door, and like it rolls out on racks. And racks of these identical gothic Lolita outfits with matching clip-on hair spirals.
Are you saying her closet is that scene from The Matrix when Neo goes guns, lots of guns, except she goes, gothic Lolita dresses, lots of gothic Lolita dresses.
You know, I was thinking about that, but actually I was thinking it might be even better if it was more like an Iron Man scenario. Where you see her in a fucking t-shirt and jeans, or fucking normie clothing, like a t-shirt and shorts, and she just like snaps her fingers or something, and then fucking rocket propelled like drill twin tails just clip themselves onto the side of her head, and you know she just fucking suits up. Anyway, that's my
new homework. New homework assignment. Draw that.
New homework assignment. Convince Robert Downey Jr. to play Celestia Ludenberg in the American adaptation of Danganronpa Trigger Happy Havoc.
Well, I mean,
it's like that review Starlight bit where she's getting into costume and there's a million sewing machines that surround her and apply makeup and stuff like that.
Yeah, speaking of Robert Downey Jr., so we're at this point in the piano hall, and We talk, and we're gonna bring up like that, you know, so that not Celeste, Kyoko knew that we would be attacked going in there, and Makoto's like, "Oh, you knew I was gonna be attacked." He's like actually shocked, and she's like, "Oh," she basically says, "Oh, you're a big boy, you can handle it," and she is so flippant about this murder thing.
Like, it's like, geez, geez, Makoto, you could have been potentially murdered and left for dead in a location that only I knew about. Come on, are we man up already? Grow a spine.
Yeah, man, man.
Grow a fucking spine, Makoto, this is America.
Don't be a small ball, Makoto.
Don't be a
what
whip,
are you,
Makoto.
Some sort of bead? Some sort of Melvin? Makoto, if you aren't okay with getting attacked by the gray naked man,
what's a gray naked man?
In a locker, and you're gonna wish I was the gray naked man.
It was Masked Smith that was attacking Makoto.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never played Killer 7. I don't know who the fuck you're talking about.
It's also worth mentioning that she gets really angry that he won't tell her what he knows, but after finding out, oh, I sent you into danger on purpose, I feel like I would be pretty... I would hesitate before telling her anything myself, too.
Oh, yeah, I should have, like... I very much was like, oh, just for that, I'm gonna be the petty bitch today. I'm not gonna tell you shit, Kyoko.
Well, the funny thing about that scene is you have no choice but
yeah,
to...
you literally have no option. I found that out after.
Yeah, it's like, it's the but thou must from the original Dragon Quest, like, scenario where if you do want to tell Kyoko, like, what's going on, the game will just, you know, give an excuse, which is like, I don't know how I feel about this particular moment.
So, what is the excuse that they used? Because I did not see it because I was very, very petty with Kyoko.
The excuse that Makoto gives is he doesn't have conclusive evidence.
That's silly. I feel like what would be funny would be better. Not necessarily funnier, but would be like, you say that shit and then she's like, do I look like an idiot? No, that's of course that didn't happen.
Yeah.
You're fucking with me.
Exactly. Or something like, okay, Makoto, it's like, hey, you do know the difference between dreams and reality, right? Or something like that.
Or something like, you know, just something that felt more natural than, like, giving the option to say a thing, and then, like, very quickly going, oh, I considered saying the thing, but I didn't. And it's like, then why give us the option?
Exactly. I remember being pissed at that choice when I played the game originally, like, a few years ago. It was like, God, this choice kind of stinks. Like, granted, you do get there is a choice in the next chapter that happens, but it does have a consequence to a certain degree.
Is that choice killing Byakuya?
No.
Oh, that's fucking lame. What are you taking for? Some sort of dweeb?
some sort of Melvin?
Some sort of Geed?
Yeah.
An absolute Melvin? Some sort of Poindexter?
So we also end up in the chemistry lab, and Aoi and Sakura get super hype, and it's actually really cute where like Sakura is like, oh, this is the good protein.
This is good shit.
This is not that swill they have in the warehouse. Aoi has a really cute line where she goes like, oh, all my prayers have been answered. I guess I'm going to need to get new prayers.
Yeah, it's some pretty good shit.
It's pretty cute. There's cute character interactions. Like, I think there's a lot of, like, Aoi and Sakura, like, moments in this chapter, but this one was definitely one of the cutest.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. I kind of wish there were more throughout the game Aoi and Sakura moments, because I feel like...
Oh, they're great.
Like, now we're not gonna get any more. We might as well have just had a couple going on of...
Yeah. And now for the obligatory, what the next games do. Well, I think it has something to do with, like, the length of this particular game being shorter than the others, that you do, unfortunately, get less just cute moments between the characters. Because, you know, like, I think we've noted before that this game feels like it's in a rush to get to places. but the other games definitely slow down, take their time, that kind of thing.
You know who's not in a rush?
Who's not in a rush?
Toko Fukawa.
Toko Fukawa's just having a big old time.
She does not plan to leave.
she desires the people carnally.
Yeah, Toko Fukawa is here to have a good time and a good time. And boy golly,
she makes it though.
The comments she makes about Aoi are like, they're like anime girl jealous in the sense of like, you know, if you're extremely hetero and you view this and like, and you are writing a character like this, you know, this is how you would go like, oh, she's jealous. But it's like the subtext of this is I don't even know if I would call it subtext. It's
plain ass text.
Toko is here to bone down, and Aoi is in her sights. Like, remember, like, was it last episode when I was like, oh yeah, you know, I don't really like that Aoi wakes up and is like, oh, I'm sad, somebody come fuck me. Toko heard that and just immediately fucking kicked the door open like, excuse me?
Yeah.
Hey!
That's the bat signal going off.
You called?
Jen, you were saying.
It's fuck o'clock and I'm ready to go!
Yeah, I was just gonna say, there's a reason why a lot of queer folks really like Toko.
God, Toko's great. I kind of love that her sprite as Sho has a little tongue loop when she's like doing these wild gesticulations.
Where she goes, Ness,
yeah. Was popping. Also, speaking of Toko, there's some fun stuff in this chapter where like, I think it's in like the bathhouse or whatever. She's like standing in front of Alter Ego, like blocking the way to it, and she goes like, oh, you want me to get out of here, huh? And then she sneezes and switches into Genocider Show.
Oh yeah, it's great. She goes from like a total like, what's the... I'm gonna expose myself as a total Melvin.
Yeah, you're like, a big fucking nerd.
Yeah, because it's like, wait a minute, which one likes pain and which one likes giving it.
Oh my god,
I forgot!
Jesus Christ.
I forgot.
So the show's very stressful. It's like, oh yeah, she goes from a mega masochist as Toko to a super sadist as
Jennifer.
Yeah,
Sho.
And that was, yeah, as Jennifer Sho.
Showtime, baby.
Yeah, so that's the... So I think that's actually specifically what somebody says, if I recall correctly. I might be paraphrasing it wrong, but yeah. Yes, that's what they say.
Yeah, I think Yasuhiro says something along those lines.
That's who says it. Yeah, it's Yasuhiro.
Yeah, he's basically, like, if we're going back to, like, crude, shitty, like, heterosexual writing, Yasuhiro is suddenly becoming, whoa, she's gone from, like, a super sadist to a mega masochist or whatever.
Well, I mean, it's the other way around.
Yeah, because...
Kiri doesn't know what S&M is. She's too pure.
I'm too pure. That's the problem.
She's just a small bean. Oh,
whoa. Whoa. Speaking of small beads, we get to hang out with Alter Ego some more, and Alter Ego has found some clues.
Yeah, I really like how they hammer home her place as one of the gang in this. Like, there's some apprehension from some of the folks, including Kirigiri, who uses Makoto's fondness for Alter Ego to dig at him, but yeah.
Hey, Kirigiri was kind of a huge dick this chapter. What's up with that?
She's stressed. Jen, you were saying.
But yeah, it's one of those situations where she just really wants to help everyone out and be seen as valued by the rest of the group. So after she ends up decrypting all of the laptop files, she spends some time figuring out what she can do next, and Makoto even reassures her that they'll find some way to get her out of the school and they'll all leave together, which is really sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... But yeah, so she has cracked the code, figured out some files, and we get to the moniker that will become, that will say a lot, let's all sing it together. The biggest, most awful, most tragic event in human history is dropped for the first time in this game. Which is just, like, I think in the Japanese is a similarly absurd and long title for what is just shorthanded, or, like, truncated to the tragedy.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where it both hammers home the ridiculousness of what they're referring to, and also outlines how this is something that confounded people to such a degree that this is the way that they refer to it.
Yeah. When I read that, I was just thinking about the, like, Inez just posted the fucking man leads at the doorway of World Trade Center bathroom, hey, you gotta finish up in there, 9/11 is happening, tweet. And in a similar vein, when I saw this title, I was thinking of, like, God, I think it might have been Team America World Police, where it was like, it's like 9/11 times 1,000.
Yeah,
9/11,000, they called it, or some shit.
Something like that.
Yeah, it's like, and it was just like, God, it's a goofy ass name, and I kind of like it because it kind of felt like Danganronpa kind of treats this. Danganronpa is very heavily entwined with its own narratives around tragedy and with its own, like, you know, thesis on tragedy as part of the human condition. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's, and I am completely bullshitting here, 150%, don't trust a single thing I say. I think it's, like, with its clearly ridiculous framing of certain things, like, with its execution and the name of, essentially, you know, it was very clearly a, like, Mad Max bullshit event, as, like, oh, the most worst terrible happened thing to ever go down, some serious bullshit, y'all, is very much, like, it's... It feels almost very hostile, I think, to insincere sentiments about violence.
How do you mean? Like,
I think, for instance, like, the idea, like, oh, this terrible thing happened, so we gotta shut, like, the initial plan seemed to be, like, oh, this terrible thing happened, so we're gonna shut ourselves away, we have to shut our future, like, our country's future needs to be shut off away from the world so that they can mature without this tragedy, without ever knowing that this tragedy happened, without ever being affected by this tragedy. And then calling it something like that to play up how, like, oh, it was super awful, as a means of making it so that it doesn't have to be confronted in sincerity by the society that presumably Danganronpa takes place in. And it feels like I don't want to say heavy-handed, it's just very text, very not subtext, very, like, straightforward, like, way of showing that this society that these characters live in that would do such a thing is basically, like, creating people like the Mastermind.
Like, basically, yeah. By trying to avoid tragedy, they have, of course, like, created tragedy in the form of the Killing Game.
I think it's less by trying to avoid it and more by, like, more like treating it as, like, I guess like the euphemism, the most terrible, awful, tragic thing kind of seems like it seems to be, like, playing it up, but in an insincere way. As in, right. like how Americans talk about 9/11.
Right? Like, how it's, like, we joked about it earlier, but it was, like, it is become...
Very specifically, yeah. It is in American politics, 9/11 is the tragedy of tragedies. We have inflicted so much more suffering on the world around us as a country. But if you ever bring up anything that has ever happened in the Middle East to an American, their first response will be, because 9/11 is just, it's not even a tragedy anymore for Americans, it's a talking point, it's a way to score points and justify you know, terrible shit that the country has done. Because, oh, people hate our freedoms. We got to fight back. We got to be the world police.
Right. Because it's been like basically the event itself has been like.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I think that, like, the way you deal with, like, you're right, like, the way you deal with tragedy, the way you deal with despair is, like, such a huge theme for this game. I mean, that's why it's constantly referencing hope and despair. That being said, like, you know, more questions, you know, than answers arise from this clue that Alter Ego found. But I do like this one line. I think it's Yasuhiro who says it. It's something about, like, hey, sticking together and finding hope, and it's sort of like, friendship has no survival value. Instead, it gives value to survival. To which everybody ignored what he was saying, and he said, hey, I said a cool thing. Come on, guys.
Yeah, he quoted it from somebody, he can't remember who, but that person was a 10,000 IQ brain genius. They knew their stuff. I thought it was pretty cool that the tragedy was never, like, gotten into, because I feel like a lesser game, like, a game that really wanted to shoot its wad and did so, like, super early, would have very specifically, like, said what the tragedy is by now. So I like that it's kind of kept a mystery. I wanted to make that note before I
finished. Sure. And the tragedy is gonna stay a mystery for a while. I actually really like it as a plot point. Like, it's interesting. Like, it adds an interesting texture to the world. And I think, you know, like you said, like, the characters dealing with it insincerely, or the way the moniker makes it difficult to sincerely engage with it, is saying a lot.
Yeah. There's another thing that I kind of want to touch down on this scene, is that when Alter Ego powers down after a job, well, after she does a job done, like, absolutely superbly, Aoi's like, oh, like, I think she pats.
She says, good job.
Like, good job. And Yasuhiro, like, teases her for it. It's like, oh, do you say good job to your computer when you power it down? And
yes.
Yes, absolutely. Yep. Of all people you're going to ask that to, Aoi Asahina, 100%, every single time she powers a computer down, she, like, pats it. She, like, pats the tower. She says, you did a good job today. And then she turns it off.
I did the same thing with my car. I had a car that I had to sell a while ago, and I had a very, like, I didn't start crying, but I did tell the car, good job, thank you for everything.
Yeah. I do the same thing with my cast iron frying pan. My hand is constantly in pain.
So,
I am forever suffering. I do not know why I do this.
You're just like, you keep putting your hand on the hot plate and going, ow.
Good job today. Ah!
So, after...
Yeah, so that was a good time.
Yeah. So, after, like, Kirigiri, like, she also, like, becomes pale as a ghost. Taking Jen's words here, like, about finding out that a middle-aged man is the, schoolmaster or something like that.
Oh man, I feel you, Kirigiri. I hate middle-aged men too. If you're middle-aged, stop listening immediately.
Yeah,
you are unpersoned to us.
Wait a minute, I just turned.
You're not middle. Yeah, you're not.
I just turned 30 though.
Kiri, here's the thing: if you aren't old enough to have, like, a child who is in high school, you're not middle-aged.
So, after the event in the bathhouse, we get confronted by Monokuma, who basically is very pissed that the gang has been not necessarily having these meetings, but he just kind of announces to everybody, an eye for an eye, a fang for a fang.
Yeah, Monokuma's like been mad lately, right? Like, he's just been upset. Yeah. For a good reason. For a good reason. We're not killing each other, so...
Yeah, know.
You know. So I really like the eye for an eye, fang for a fang thing. Like, the twist on it of, like... if you gain a weapon, I also am going to gain a weapon, I guess. Because it's very clear that at a certain point, like, he knows something is up. So, it's kind of like after this, we go into our daily life segment. So, I want to know, who did you hang out with? Jen, who did you hang out with this chapter?
I hung out with Yasuhiro, who,
Yeah. Yasuhiro Club.
Yeah, he does this thing where he... I only got to hang out with him once because... Well, I only got one story thing with him because I ended up giving him bad gifts later. But the one that I got was him talking about how his rate of prediction is around 20 to 30%. And he gives Makoto a trial... trial prediction, and that's when he's like, your wife and my wife will be the same. And it's this
just casually proposing like a polyamorous relationship from the future,
basically. Makoto, yeah,
my wife.
I like, yeah. You come on over. Yeah, just like there is a series of like that, and when Toko makes a joke that she had a dad and two moms. And it was like, oh, there's like a lot of jokes about being poly, huh?
Now, I don't know how to. Should I cut that? No. I was just gonna say, I think it's just very heavily implied that like it's not that her parents are poly. It's that her dad is fucking another woman, like. Very brazenly in front of her, like, actual mother. Yeah, no, listen. Danganronpa is pretty alright. I don't think that it actually knows what's up with polyamory. I think Toko's dad is just cheating.
Fair enough.
My interpretation is that I don't know what the fuck it's talking about. Honestly, I don't think the translators really know what the fuck they're talking about either.
I don't think anybody knows what the fuck they're talking about. We're really just saying words.
Yeah,
on this
like
podcast.
It seems like a line that nobody really knew how to handle because it just sort of comes out of nowhere.
Fair enough. So, yeah, you hear that goof from Yasuhiro, yeah. And I got that. I got a few other things in his story. He passes off a crystal ball to you. He tries to give, like, he at first, I think, charges like $1,000 for a reading or something, or like $1 million or some absurd amount. And he's been like cutting back on the prices of like, oh, for you, I'll give you a prediction for only $600 now, Makoto.
Ah, what a steal.
What a steal. What a good guy. But I don't know, I would think a prediction rate of like 20 to 30% is pretty fucking good.
I mean, considering that, like, you know, he's the ultimate clairvoyant, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like 20 to 30%, considering clairvoyancy isn't a thing that people actually have, being able to correctly predict the future apropos of nothing 20 to 30% of the time, pretty good.
Not
like,
a cult though. Not a cult. That's what he says. Hey, I don't deal in that occult stuff. I use real shit.
Oh, it's like, totally legit.
Like this crystal skull. Like this crystal skull.
Yeah, it's crystal skull.
Listen. Unless he's got a bog witch, it's not a cult.
That is true.
Yeah, you need, listen. There are rules about this thing. You like to be OSHA certified occult, you need at least a cauldron, which, you know, has to have a foot clearance away from any walls or any flat or windows or, you know, flammable substances. You need a certified bog witch. That means somebody who has passed the test, has a license.
And
the license has
updated this year.
Yes, they need to have the up-to-date bog witch guidelines. Because if you don't have the up-to-date bog witch guidelines, you're going to cast some bad incantations. You're going to do some bad clairvoyancy. You're going to get some bad portents.
Yeah.
And
did you... Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, You really want me to keep going with Bogwitch rules?
Yeah.
No. No. Yeah, I was gonna say who you hang out. Who'd you hang out with, Jackie?
I hung out with Toko twice.
Mm-hmm.
Sakura once, and then who else did I hang out with? Toko twice, Sakura once, and then I guess I hung out with
Kirigiri.
I think it might have been it was Kirigiri. Nobody really had anything interesting to say. I do like that Toko, I do kind of find, against my better judgment, I find it kind of endearing that Toko is, kind of skittish and reticent when you are, genuinely nice to her. Because I feel like Toko's whole thing is that people generally treat her like shit, and she's just used to it. Right. So it is kind of nice to, and I hope that, maybe her arc is a little bit, not, not just, fetishy waifu-y thing. It's just she's totally submissive. Which I don't think that they would do. But I kind of like that, that for her, social link, so to speak, you're just genuinely, showing up and being like, oh, yeah, I want to hang out with you. I want to get to know more about you. And it's, and she seems to build up a little more self-respect after that. I kind of like that. She is definitely the character most in need of a backbone.
Yeah.
Yeah. The one thing I'll say about Altered Despair Girls at this point is if you want to see some really cool moments with Toko, that's one of the few good qualities about that game.
I am sold enough on Toko to want to try it.
Yeah. She's she does get plenty of good moments in UDG. I was about to say the name of our show.
Almost did the same thing.
I was almost expecting you to say UDL, and I'm like, wait, what?
Toko's at UDL.
Fucking Toko and put Toko in Undernight, please.
Put
if you're listening to this French bread, put Toko in Undernight. I just started
actually.
It's very good.
Yeah, Arxis, if you're listening, put Danganronpa as the next cross tag battle.
Arxis,
franchise.
If you're listening, give me a job. I've always wanted to work for Arxis, and if you're listening to a podcast that I am a part of, you are obviously a fan because you have good taste, and I know you do. This is Arxis the person, by the way. John Arxis, the guy in charge of fighting games.
Hey everybody, it's me again. Thank you so much for listening to episode 7 of Ultimate Despair Reprise. I certainly hope you've enjoyed the past month or so of special guests. It took me a lot of work to get them, so huge shout outs to everyone who came on: Brian Beacock, Kira Buckland, Sean Chiplock, and Dorothy Fawn. Huge thank you for coming onto the show, speaking with us, and hey, if you're listening to this episode and listening to the show because of those interviews, welcome. I hope you stick around. We have a lot of really fun stuff planned in the future. The show is going to slow down just a little bit. We were putting episodes pretty much every week throughout parts of April, most of May. So we're going to kind of slow down, go back to our bi-weekly schedule. But hey, I'm looking into getting some more guests, and like I said, we got lots and lots of fun stuff planned in the future. But anyway, it's time for the shoutouts. Thank you so much to the Scanline Media Network for hosting this podcast. I have recently joined up with Scanline Media. I have been a huge fan of theirs for quite some time. That's not just because I'm part of the shows. Their shows are always fantastic. We got lots of podcast reviews, articles, everything you want. In this modern, if you want the hottest of takes. I don't know why I said that, but hey, We got a lot of stuff going on. You gotta check out shows like The Garnet Wager or The Johto Quorum. And hey, subscribe to our Patreon. You get access to Oops All Anime, an exclusive Patreon show for a mere $1 a month. You can spare a dollar, can't you? You know, just $1 a month and you'll get some really, really great stuff. I was on there to talk about Fruits Basket and Wakakozake. We had Tube Mellow on here to talk about Godzilla. And we just... it's been a lot of fun, and we have a lot of great episodes. So definitely check that out. That is patreon.com/scanlinemedia. And of course, you can go to scanlinemedia.com for the latest for that information. Also, huge thanks to Vetrom for providing the music. As always, check them out on youtube.com/VTMprojects. They got remixes from Danganronpa, Pokemon, My Hero Academia, much, much more. You like those Trauma Team games? You don't even know what Trauma Team is? I can't blame you. It's a sequel to Trauma Center, but Vetron's got remixes for that too. Check them out. The remixes are always hot fire. I always love it whenever they post a new remix because they just are incredibly talented. Huge thank you for letting us use your music and your support. And lastly, huge shout-outs to Scotty from the Danganronpa Wiki for our hot new avatar and album art. We were blown away by this, and Scotty gave us permission to use it for our show. So definitely check out their work on the Danganronpa Wiki. I use the Danganronpa Wiki whenever I need to find research for this show. So check them out, and also check out their Twitter, @DanganronpaWiki. Be wary of spoilers, but it has tons and tons of detailed information about all the characters and the games and betas, and just there's so much in there. They work really hard, so they definitely deserve your support. Again, that's the Danganronpa Wiki @DanganronpaWiki. So anyway, that'll do it for me. Your homework next time is the investigation and trial of Chapter 4 of Danganronpa 1, Trigger Happy Havoc. I'll talk to you soon. Later.
So, in Kiri's absence, I suppose this means that I'm in charge of the podcast and nobody can stop me.
Shut the fuck up. Die.
Well, anyway.
Perish. Gotta throw your bones off a cliff.
What?
I will throw my own bones off a cliff. Thank you very much, Inez.
I walk away for 30 seconds. You're talking about throwing bones off a cliff.
That's me.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
Inez, who did you hang out with?
I think, like Jackie, I also hung out with Toko twice. Once with Sakura, and I think once with Aoi. I pretty much agree with everything that Jackie said about Toko. I like that you kind of getting her out of her shell.
Yeah, it's really charming.
Yeah, I want to be Toko's rock. That's all I'm saying. I just want to be Toko's rock.
Well, at this point, Inez, you got to cosplay as Toko. Jackie, you got to cosplay as Koma.
I will cosplay. If the next word out of your mouth is Byakuya, I will fucking fly down there and I will kick your ass.
I wasn't going to say Byakuya. I was blanking on the name of the other character in Ultimate Despair Girls.
I kind of thought you were about to say Komaeda for a moment.
Well,
which I was about to ask. You sure?
It's Kamaru.
Thank you. Thank you, Jennifer. You are my rock on this podcast. You are all many rocks.
We're all diamonds.
The rock.
Oh, yeah.
Also,
I would like to be a boulder.
Also,
diamond is not crash.
I hung out with Aoi, and she actually had kind of a funny conversation. Somehow she forgot what a donut is. Like she forgot what it was called somehow. So she asked you to clarify it for her. And you do, and she has this realization that there were like frozen donuts in the storeroom.
Incredible.
And then she says to you, Makoto, I'm going to kick your ass if you don't get out of my way because I need to go eat these frozen donuts.
Imagine walking into a cafeteria and being like, I will beat the ass of anyone who gets in my way of these Krispy Kreme donuts I got from the grocery store.
All I'm saying is if you get between Aoi Asahina and her donuts, you do deserve to get your ass beat. That's all I'm saying. Like,
all we're saying here is that Aoi Asahina needs her. She needs her carbohydrates. She needs her donuts.
No, she needs her donuts.
She's got. Listen, she's an active
girl.
I suddenly
have the perfect place to stick the Akiya.
In front of donuts.
In front of the donuts, and just like, listen. That's how you do it. Actually, Jen, you talked about who you hung out with.
Yeah, it was basically I had the same Aoi conversation as Inez, and I hung out with Yasuhiro.
Yeah.
How was Yasuhiro?
He's hilarious, as I've stated. Did I say that he was trying to push a crystal ball onto you? Because he pushes a crystal ball onto you, and he mutters something about... No, but he mutters something about meeting a quota.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. And then he quizzes you on what kind of what divination techniques require major arcana and minor arcana. And it's
normal people things.
You know, normal things.
Yeah, normal people.
Oh, he does say something pretty neat with I think I'm like second to last with his social link. And one thing he mentions is that he wants to get out soon because he's worried about something on the outside, and you inquire, like, what exactly are you worried about? He says, like, well, my house is full of all these artifacts. These artifacts I bought on the internet, they're all priceless and valuable, and someone might take them all. And yeah. you just kind of realize that, like, he
you
really
pull a notepad and go, Hiro, what's your address again? Mm-hmm. All right. And what times do you usually work? What times would you usually be? Oh, okay, cool. And now if you could just like bust that and just if you could just like open just jot down right here where you keep your security cameras and
oh, yeah, it's angles here, and here.
Perfect. Perfect.
All his Dan Aykroyd crystal skull.
Why would
vodkas.
I do that, Kiri? I would never steal anything from
my
friend Yasuhiro.
I mean you
now Byakuya now he's a rat motherfucker.
And Monokuma is just already gonna have stolen everything in there.
Like, listen, if I clench hard enough, Monokuma will not be able to crawl out of my ass.
Those are his hostages.
Listen, Inez. Monokuma has crawled up my ass, and I'll be damned if he comes out.
Did you forget about the motive videos?
Speaking of asses, we're moving along. So, we have let's talk about Byakuya getting slapped across the face. Because, boy, right, it's pretty good.
It's good.
We briefly before the show, I talked about how it was not nearly enough.
Yeah.
Byakuya, like, God, Byakuya just... We have this conversation, like, every episode, but I really do not like him.
Yeah.
I
think if
and
nothing...
I was...
Go ahead.
I was kind of really disappointed that, like, the way that scene goes down is, like, Aoi slaps him, and he continues to talk shit, and then she feels upset and runs away. And it's, like, it really just throws me for a loop that, like, again, there's no rule that says you can't beat his ass, you know, without killing him. I really am surprised that nobody has just decked. Because he really is asking to be punched in the face.
Right.
Like, for a bunch of hormonal teenagers who are going through a lot of grief, everybody has shown some incredible restraint to not deck the glasses-wearing fuckface who is shit-talking all of their dead friends every single time. Like, every time he opens his mouth, he has something vile and repulsive to say. And
right.
It never happens.
Well, I mean... I think it's one of these, like, Something I've noticed is, like, this scene in this chapter is, like, tensions are escalating because Kyoko is, like, overreacting and, like, not wanting to see Makoto at all. You have, you know, Aoi getting into fights with people because, like, the scene, like, after this is, like, she gets into a fight with Genocider Sho. Like,
she doesn't even initiate the fight. Sho initiates on her is the thing that drives me nuts, too. Like,
right, I just mean is, like, everybody's kind of, like, characters are starting to get at their wit's end. That's just kind of my takeaway on that, is that...
It very much feels like, again, and I think I'm kind of, I know that this is getting on you and Jen, so, when I say this, like, every time, but it feels like everybody is at their wit's end, except for Byakuya, who can just, like, float through without consequence. And I feel like it's kind of... I mean, hopefully this is done better later on in the series, but he very much is... He's very difficult to deal with.
Right. I would just argue that, like, we don't spend a ton of time with him, so we don't even really get... Like, he intentionally isolates himself from the rest of the group, so it's kind of hard to, like, get a read on him.
But this is the same, and this is the same thing where, like, he's a fictional character, and even if he is intentionally isolating himself from the group, there are ways that you can write that where it doesn't, where, like, he doesn't come out of his, like, hermit hovel to, like, basically call you a fuckass and be like, oh, I'm glad all your friends are dead, haha, fuck you, idiot, and then go back into hiding.
Right.
And
as Jennifer, what are your takeaways of this sequence?
I really don't like Byakuya. Like, he's a jerk, but he doesn't really feel like the fun kind of jerk. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. You know what I was thinking? A really fun jerk character is Dio.
Yeah.
In, like, part one, Phantom Blood, like, before he becomes a vampire, he is a really fucking fun antagonist.
Right.
He's a huge dick, he sucks, and he's very, like, he goes out of his way to make JoJo miserable.
Right.
And he is a fucking blast every time he comes on the screen, because he's just fun to hate. But, like, Byakuya is just not, like...
Right. Jen?
I think Byakuya does take it a little too far in this chapter. I think previously he's been more of a edgelord jerk situation, but he specifically goes too far in several conversations here to the point where people are straight up feeling like they want to assault him, and kind of do. And it's one of those situations where, yeah, right now he's just brushing everything off and being like, oh, you can't stop me, I'm Byakuya. But there is this sense that if he continues down this road, things are going to go real south real fast.
Yeah, that's...
I don't want to argue, but I do feel inclined to disagree. I feel like characters say that, but again, Byakuya has not been wrong at any point up... I mean, not been wrong in a meaningful, humiliating way up to this point. He's walked everything off. It's just gone, like, water off a duck's back. He is totally untouched.
Sure. And I think, again, that does come down to the problem of, like, I think I mentioned earlier, the length of this game is that the game doesn't feel like it doesn't, like, spend enough time with any one of its characters in order to, you know, get that across. Inez?
Yeah, also, I think kind of a problem with Byakuya is that he doesn't really have enough screen time to make his appearances feel like, oh, this is a jerk character, but one who's kind of fun still. Like, it kind of feels like he only really comes out to insult someone or say that, oh, I have a clue, but I'm not going to tell you, and then just leave. Like, it never really feels like his character gets developed beyond that.
Right.
I was kind of, like, if they try and do pathos with his character, if they try and make him, like, a sympathetic, tragic figure or something, if he gets his comeuppance, or not even if he gets his comeuppance, if, like, something undeserved bad happens to him, it won't land, is the thing. So he's kind of in this awkward position between, like, fun, between, he's a character who's both trying to be fun and hateable, and, like,
a this, little too much.
And, yeah, well, that, and also, like, he's trying to be hateable in a way that you want to see him change, but he just ends up being a character who's, like, hateable. Like, the only common ground there is that he is a fucking detestable slime man, and the sooner we can flush him down the toilet, the better.
Right. So definitely, like, it is around this time of the chapter which, like, feelings are absolutely escalating, right? And one of them is Aoi and Sho have a confrontation, right? And you get Aoi to the nurse's office, and I really like this sequence, because the moment Sakura hears that Aoi is hurt, she is livid. Someone want to tell us a little bit more about that scene?
So for the past 20 or 30 minutes in the game, of game time anyway, there's this sense that everyone's pretty much pushed out Sakura, and Sakura is more or less taking it because of how... because she knows how serious it was that she agreed to something like that, and she doesn't want to stir anything else up. But hearing that Asahina is getting hurt by... is essentially getting hurt by her previous actions and promises makes Sakura incredibly angry, and she essentially insists that she's going to draw a line. And it's this interesting transformation of, you see her being more reserved and apologetic earlier, but as soon as her girlfriend gets hurt, she just loses it and goes, okay, I'm taking care of this right now.
Right, because earlier when it was revealed that she was, like, a spy for Monokuma, she seems to take the isolation she takes to, like, hey, like, listen, I may or not have reason, doesn't really matter, like, it doesn't seem to be, I wouldn't say affecting her, but it's, like, she just kind of says, oh, I'm gonna take on the mastermind, I'm gonna make this right, right? But you get this sense that, like, after, you know, Aoi has been hurt, that she is really, like, no, I really need to do something about this. Like, something needs to happen, right? And I just really, really like it, because it's, like, there's something kind of visceral about that sequence of, like, how upset Sakura is that Aoi is hurt, that I think work. It's, to me, like, it's probably my favorite moment during this chapter, is this very, like, realistic response to, like, when you find out a loved one has been hurt and is like, oh, I'm going to do something about this. It's very good. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Out of curiosity, did anyone else catch the reference that was going on when everyone else finds Sakura's death?
The scene from Ashita no Joe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that is a, like, pretty common animation reference. It's a fucking good one, because, like, the thing is, like, that framing, that shot framing is fucking perfect.
Like, oh, yeah, like, the Ashita smirk no on Joe her face. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Ashita no Joe nailed it, like, the OG, the one that everybody's referencing, like, that nailed it. Like, that's a very good pose. And it's been recreated in a lot of works, like, you know.
Yeah. For those who don't know, Ashita no Joe was an old boxing anime and manga, and the final shot of the manga, like, this was, like, back in the 70s, I believe, the final shot of it is the hero, Joe, has, like, gone 12 rounds, I think, with this other boxer.
I think it's actually closer to, like, 20 rounds. He just goes apeshit. He goes apeshit in the ring, and he doesn't win the fight.
I think it's, like, a win by decision for the other dude, but, like, the fight is so intense, like, the dude's hair turns white.
Yes, the fight is so intense that the other dude's hair turns white, and that he ages, like, 20 years in the fight. Like, that's why his hair goes white. And Joe, who is significantly smaller, I think it should be added, that he's, you know, Joe is, I think, a bantamweight, and this guy's a heavyweight?
I think it was always that he was either a bantamweight or a featherweight, and he's going up against dudes, like, five times his, like, weight class.
Yeah, so Joe sits down in the ring, and his coach tries to, like, get him up, and Joe is, like, dead. He died in the ring, you know, doing, you know, basically proving that he deserved where he got. Like, you know, that all the battles that he won, that he, you know, he has never backed down from a challenge. And I think that's very good, kind of a good echo for Sakura. Like, I think she really... Of all of the characters whose deaths reference this pose, I think Sakura has earned it the most.
Yeah, because Sakura has definitely been a character that we've seen throughout this game to be, like, she is, like, she could be the steadfast, like, rock that, like, protects other people. She could do, and you see her fighting Monokuma and just... She is a fighter in all sense of the word.
Yeah, she's been kind of a stabilizing force through the game. Like, she's been kind of reliable as there and, like, calm.
Yeah, and that's what makes her scene in which she gets really angry, like, so affecting, because it's like, you never really see her get angry for longer than a couple seconds. You know, she doesn't get the Ultra Instinct aura or whatever for more than a couple of frames, you know? Like, but when she finds out about Aoi's, like, injury and everything like that, it's like, oh, she's ready to do something. She says she's drawing a line, you know? You know, Inez, it's interesting, you posted a screenshot about, like, you did a Sakura social link, right? And she said something very interesting.
Yeah. She says when you give her a gift that she really likes, she says that somehow you remind me of him. And then she says, forget I said that, I'm just talking to myself. Like, she's trying to play it off.
It is kind of interesting, through her social links, she's kind of letting her guard down around you. No, Sakura is a great character. Go ahead.
Oh, I feel like Sakura is an interesting case of a character who can say a lot of things while saying, like, in text, very little. Everything, like, that's I guess that's kind of the thing, like, thematically, she is a martial artist. And in martial arts, every movement matters. So I feel like the way they approached her writing is that every time she acts and every time she does something, it's very deliberate and very, like, pointed, even within the narrative. I think, like, Sakura's writing at points is some of the highest highs. Like, it's pretty fucking good.
Yeah. Sakura's a fantastic character. Jen, what did you think about these scenes and Sakura in general?
I found it really powerful because Sakura is probably my favorite character within this first game, or at least one of my favorite characters by far. And having a situation where, like, they don't even try and make her, even though they're doing it as a reference, and typically references are seen as a parody, they seem to treat her with the... Now that they've gotten all the transphobic jokes out of their system, they seem to be treating her with the utmost respect for that sort of thing. And I feel like emotionally they give her a lot of time, attention, and care, and it really shows right up until right up through her death and all that.
She has a line that sticks out to me that she was saying, like, if you were to hate someone, hate me. And I think that, like, speaks to her character really powerfully, because her whole thing is, I'm the strong one, I can take it on the chin, don't take it out on others. And, like, that's just such a great concept for, like, I love that character concept, and I think they did a really great job with Sakura. So the question is, Inez, Jackie, who done it?
I would say, well, it's kind of a locked room puzzle, huh? So it can't be Celeste again.
No, she can't. Celeste
came back from the dead and marked me. Whoops.
Celeste is the one character I would believe would come back from the dead, and she would, like, she negotiated her way out of hell.
Yeah, she fucking gambled. She's like, okay, death, we're gonna play fucking dice, but she sneaks loaded dice into the afterlife.
She doesn't have to. She's just a great gambler.
She's a great gambler.
She
flips her side to six whenever death's not looking. The serious guess I would give is honestly the headmaster. Because for some reason, I think the headmaster isn't bound by the same rules that Monokuma is. Like, the, mm-hmm. like, so the idea of, like, oh, Monokuma can't kill a student, because that's not fair. But the headmaster can technically be bound by the rules of the killing game, just far away and given special privileges so that they don't have to participate in it. I think the idea that they're a 30-year-old man, I think that's a red hair, a red herring. I don't really think that that's the specific case of it, but I do think that they are involved in some way, shape, or form.
Okay, and as your guess,
I'm not really sure. I would. My theory right now is that Sakura tried to oppose Monokuma in some way, and like Monokuma's reprisal was killing Sakura, or Monokuma told Sakura to do something that she just couldn't accept. And she killed herself.
I mean, that's essentially,
like,
yeah.
Also, like, since it does mirror that bit from Ashita no Joe, like, that's the frame we see when he loses.
She's
defeated in death.
You know what? I think that's the gist of it. Like, that's kind of what I was getting at, but I think Inez got it much more succinctly. I think definitely, like, she is defeated. But in Ashita no Joe, like what the pose is referencing, like, he lost the battle, but he won the war. And I think with Sakura's death, there's going to be some incriminating evidence, like maybe the mastermind's name, or something, and we're going to finally, like, get up in there and figure out what's up.
Finally get an edge on the people that have been controlling them this whole time. Like you said, lost the battle, but will help win the war.
Also, like, you kind of have to remember that, like, the room was sealed from the inside, and there's ostensibly no other way in besides the door out to the hallway. Which seems to imply that Sakura did it herself. Like, there was a chair blocking the door.
Yeah. So, final thoughts on this chapter. Starting with Jackie, final thoughts.
I wish I could read.
Toko said flat rights.
Jen, final thoughts.
This is my favorite chapter in the game, and I'm excited for y'all to find out why.
Yeah, it's pretty spectacular. Gosh, what a, you know, overall, I think it was pretty good. Like, we've finally gotten, like, the game is, I am reminded why I, like, still have an affection for the first game.
Yeah.
Well, thank you everybody for joining us. Appreciate it. I've been your ultimate host, Kyrie.
And I've been Jennifer.
I've been Jackie. I will continue to be Jackie, hopefully.
Now and forever.
Now and forever, I am the eternal Jackie. The final Jackie, so to speak.
I'm an ass.
Class dismissed, everybody.
Does this look like chess club to you? No, this is video games club. We're even worse toys for children. None of us can read.
Except in this game, in which you have to deal with tons and tons of reading.
No, I had text to talk doing it all for me.
It was Craig.
Craig did it.
I actually made a program that translates all of Danganronpa into smoke signals.
See, I very specifically am playing this game on my rock that I got in the middle of my cave. Okay. What I do is I set up a little fire and I just throw the rock through it, and then like whatever sound it makes through reverberates through the cave is, I kind of just interpret that noise as like the text of the game. So in truth, I have no fucking clue what's going on. I'm a fucking caveman.
Well, I was wondering where that was going, but okay.
My name is Thog, Unga Bunga Rockstar.